Hello, and welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic we boomer want to know about, getting our financial houses in order as we look toward retirement. This evening, we are continuing to talk about how we can overcome self-sabotaging financial habits that many of us have developed so that we can start to save more toward our retirements. Retirement savings is, of course, a topic we've looked at many times before, but it's a hugely important one, especially considering that current research shows that 50% of us Americans have not saved for retirement and are therefore feeling some real anxiety about how we are going to afford retirement. This is especially crucial considering that longevity experts now tell us that given advances in health and safety, we might be retired for 30 years after that traditional 65 retirement age. So tonight, our topic is a review of the many ways that many of us have sabotaged ourselves financially, and then hopefully we will be able to go forward from that and take a look at how to stop this bad behavior on our part. But before we do, let me give you listeners a bit of insight as to who is on this call. My name is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. Tonight, I'll be speaking with one of our favorite guest experts, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, a Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor and NABBW's Retirement Planning Associate, and we'll be covering the fascinating topic of financial self-sabotage. Pam, NABBW's Retirement Planning Associate, is an expert in personal finance and a frequent teleseminar guest who always covers important information related to money and financial planning, something that too many of us baby boomer women don't know enough about. Pam is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. Her firm's focus is helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by learning the importance of placing our own needs first. Pam firmly believes sound investment management starts with understanding each woman's goals and then working up a financial plan once the goals are understood. In the past, Pam and I have talked about important topics such as how couples are retirement challenged because they haven't made time to sit down and really talk about their retirement plans and goals. We've also discussed how boomers making time to plan their financial strategies is necessary in order to make a solid retirement possible. And as a result of these many discussions that Pam and I have had over the past few years, we are very aware of two things. Number one, Americans are living longer, and number two, as a group, we are not prepared to retire. So once again, Pam, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Anne. Happy April to you.
Oh, happy April to you, too. I'm glad we got past April 1st because I kept getting emails yesterday. I kept thinking, is this real or is this fake?
Exactly. You have to always be on your guard for April Fool's Day.
Right.
You never know what's going to happen.
That's true. But it's April 2nd today, and there's no fools about what we are going to be talking about here tonight. Pam,
exactly.
I'm sure that in your practice, as you meet with new clients, you find that most of us like to regard ourselves as rational spenders and investors, people who work to optimize the use of our hard-earned money. But you have probably been able to tell, would probably be able to tell us from your experience that we're deluding ourselves when we think that we are, especially because I've read that psychologists and other financial advisors tell us that most people are actually in the grip of emotional traps and mental biases that keep us from making the most of our money. And in fact, sometimes these traps and biases guarantee that we'll actually do the worst thing possible with our money. So Pam, today's topic, the fact that so many of us mm-hmm. boomers have somehow sabotaged ourselves financially and thus find ourselves without enough money to save toward retirement, that topic I think is a really sad topic. It's because psychologically driven money missteps can be really costly, and the first step toward avoiding mm-hmm. them is recognizing that they exist in the first place. I know that we probably all grew up hearing...
Exactly.
Yeah, you probably heard, as I heard, you know, my dad started me with a little piggy bank. It was shaped like mm-hmm. a globe, and it sat on the top of my little chest of drawers when I was a kid, and I was supposed to put my pennies and nickels into it, and, you know, my parents said to me that I needed to be saving for a rainy day, which I didn't quite understand.
Mm-hmm.
I took it kind of literally back then because I was less than
exactly.
five. But it sounds like the storm clouds are looming in front of many of us, and suddenly – too many of us realize that we don't have a safe harbor in sight. In fact, it's a good part of the reason why so many of us boomers are choosing to delay our actual retirement days. It's just the bottom line is we can't afford to retire. And I was talking with a reporter from a paper in, I think it was in Ohio yesterday. He was wanting to ask me about the division between baby boomers and millennials. He seemed to think that there was, you know, friction between these two demographics and that a lot of it had to do with the fact that baby boomers won't retire. And I said, and I asked him how old he was, and he's 59, so I think he actually understood what he was asking me about. But I said, you know, a lot of the reason that these people, that the millennials are upset with won't retire is because they can't afford to retire. So having belabored that point, this can't afford thing, long enough here, let's get to the big questions here tonight. Why have we, Pam, why have we sabotaged our own futures when we have, as a whole, worked so hard to assure our children a bright future?
That probably is the million-dollar question when it comes to financial sabotage. But where I want to start with it is really to describe it, financial self-sabotage. And people know what self-sabotage is, but the financial self-sabotage is when it occurs that you're making the choice to do something else with your money that works against your overall guidelines for your budget and your future financial goals. So just to repeat that again, you're making a choice against any guidelines for your budget and your future. And what that what happens generally is that you're using money meant for either bills, debt, or savings to buy things, you know, such as a new computer, you go on a, you know, frivolous trip, or you just tend to just overspend. And a lot of that is, you know, in our brains in terms of, you know, we happen to be a society of self or instant gratification. So sometimes against our better judgment, you know, we see the shiny new object that we want to go and we rationalize to ourselves, you know, I've worked hard, I've deserved it, and then boom, there you go. You buy this shiny new object when, in fact, that money was allocated for bills and or to pay down debt and or savings for, you know, for your future goals. So that's kind of the basis that we're dealing with in terms of financial sabotage, is really making sure we're making smart choices with our money that is not working against us, because then, you know, we end up in that same bucket like you know, I think you had explained before, and then also during, I think, you know, last month's call, is that we're not saving enough. And sometimes that comes to the fact that we're doing other things with our money that may be working against us in terms of saving for retirement.
All right. I totally agree with what you're saying there, and I understand it. I also think that we need to point out that we've all heard that adage, that statement that we hear from self-help people that say that it's impossible to change the future if we keep doing the same things that we've been doing. So realizing that that's true, I think that we need to start the discussion here tonight by looking at some of the bad habits and starting to recognize them, because I'm fearing that a lot of our bad habits, some of the ones that you very – you know, just talked about, you know, the idea of I'm going to give myself a treat, you know, I'm going to get that I don't know what it is, that new car or something, you know, just because I deserve it, and I've had a good month, so, you know, I'm going to treat myself, and that is, you know, clearly falls into the category of bad habits. So these are things that we've probably done unintentionally, and yet the long-term result of that is more than just a, you know, it's long-lasting. So I believe that as we got ready for this call, you identified 8 habits of the financially unsuccessful. And I think probably our first step as we go through the discussion here tonight is to run through those bad habits so our listeners can determine if any of those apply to themselves. And the first one that you've identified rings so true. You call it comparing ourselves to others, but I think that, you know, it's common enough habit that we have a phrase card called keeping up with the Joneses.
Keeping up with the Joneses, yep, exactly. And I basically specifically say comparing ourselves to others, but it's definitely what you had mentioned before, keeping up with the Joneses. You know, many people look around and then we feel – that we have less than somebody else, because we're always comparing, you know, based on, you know, my previous conversation, what I said is, you know, we have those shiny new objects. So if somebody next door has that shiny new object, what do we think we need? We need that shiny new object as well. So a lot of times we end up falling into the financial sabotage and self-sabotaging ourselves financially because we are trying to compare ourselves to others. So looking at, you know, or even when you start thinking about going outside of what your needs are, is really make a comparison, or, you know, see if you're falling into this particular habit of comparing yourself to others. You know, how are you feeling when you look at your neighbor or, you know, your person, you know, your friend or something at church or at work, making comparisons to them, to what they have versus what you have. And the same goes also with making financial choices based on what others are doing. You know, a lot of times I get, you know, recommendations that I give to clients, and for some reason or else they want to compare to see what everybody else is doing. You know, these recommendations are specific for that particular person, not what that your friend may be doing or your neighbor may be doing, because their goals are different. That's why I always start with goals and values based planning to make sure everything is customized and specific for you and not somebody else. So we have a tendency, of course, you know, as human beings to compare ourselves to others. And when it comes to the self-sabotage part of it, that's where we really fall down, is, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. There was probably a movie several years ago that I saw that was very interesting. It was actually called The Joneses, where, you know, in a community, it was their job basically to go in and flash these different products and services to people, to have them buy those products and services based on what they were introduced. And you can see how it just spread like wildfire. One person got it, another person got it, another person got it, because they saw somebody else with it, or somebody told them that's what they needed to buy to you know, keep up with everybody else. So it is definitely one of those habits that a lot of people fall trapped with, trying to compare ourselves to others and keep up with people. If you think, you know, that's something that is affecting you, really just kind of stop and take a look and make that decision based on, do I need this, or do I want this? Those are always the two questions I always have people ask when they start, especially working in a financial plan, trying to save and trying to budget, is a needs and wants-based conversation. Do you need it or do you want it? So a lot of people really need to kind of factor in those two questions to see if they're comparing themselves to others.
I think that's very solid, and probably along with the need versus want, you probably also have to ask yourself, and can I afford it? You know,
exactly. Yeah.
Maybe you might have a need for something, but maybe you need to look at, you know, not the top of the line car. If you actually legitimately need a car, like, you know, maybe for yourself or for a child or a grandchild. I know there's people out there that buy their grandchildren cars. I think that's a discussion for another day. But the question would be, do they need to have the Corvette, or could they get along with having a I remember when my kids were first starting to drive, one of my brother's good friends, her parents bought her a slightly used Volvo because they felt that she was going to be possibly the most safe that she could possibly be in driving a Volvo. I'm sure that she didn't think it was the sexiest car out there on the student parking lot, but it made sense that they had found her. You know, it wasn't brand new, so it was, you know, they were saving themselves some money with buying a slightly used car, but it was certainly not the most. They felt that it was a safe decision.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's comparing ourselves with others. I think that is something that I'm afraid that might be human nature, to just always be comparing ourselves to other people. So we'll have to look at, after we get done with these habits, how we might be able to overcome that innate situation. But before we get onto that, let's look at some of the other bad habits. The second one you said was living with a harsh inner dialogue.
Yeah, and what I mean there is really doubting whether or not we are good enough for certain things. And that's probably just something that, you know, that's even outside, of course, you know, finances, is we always have that, you know, self-doubt, you know, who are we? Can we do, you know, certain things? Can we, you know, retire with the lifestyle that we want? Can we do all these other things? And we have that little tiny voice inside that always tells us that we're not good enough, or, you know, those things that like I explained, inner dialogue that's going on inside of yourself. So a lot of times that affects your self-sabotage because you're telling yourself, I'm not good enough, or I don't deserve something. And then what happens on the outside is that you try to kill that inner voice and say, yes, I am good enough, and so I'm going to, you know, go out and buy this thing because I'm just as good as anybody else. So you have these things kind of working inside of yourself in order to feel better about yourself. Sometimes you go out and self-sabotage yourself financially just so you can quiet that inner voice that's telling you, I'm not good enough, or I don't deserve this, or I don't, you know, need this particular thing. So we kind of disprove that inner voice sometimes. So that's what I meant by we have the harsh inner dialogue amongst ourselves, really trying to consider either feeding that voice or listening to that inner voice and then doing something else besides what you know to be true to yourself outside of listening to what's going on in your kind of that self-talk, the negative self-talk that a lot of people have inside themselves, and then trying to overcome that with something that will be able to basically, you know, like I said, what we explained before, really, you know, I deserve it, I'm good enough. Then we go out and we buy things to help us feel better.
Okay, very, very good to bring that one up. I think a lot of people would feel kinship to that situation. So what's next?
Procrastination. That's always on the top of everybody's list, is that we think we have more time than we really do. Or I call it analysis paralysis sometimes, is that if we don't know what to do or the right thing to do, or we're not sure what we need to be doing, all of that stimuli comes into your brain, and then you don't do anything at all. That's why I call it analysis paralysis. And you end up procrastinating. So, you know, we've had several conversations over the years about how people need to, you know, invest properly, or, you know, save, you know, on an ongoing basis, on a monthly basis, or, you know, put something away. And sometimes people, you know, can't either find it in their budget, or they don't know how to get started with investing, or they don't know how to get started with knowing what I need, you know, for retirement, or how do I even, you know, get started. So without even doing anything, they're just kind of stuck, and we procrastinate. You know, the one thing to do is just really to take small steps, you know, take one positive step to get started. You know, that's why, you know, every time we have our the beginning of the month phone call is usually how to get yourself into better financial habits. And one of them is basically to take one small positive step in a direction to improve your finances, either set up a budget, start saving more money for cash reserves, increasing your 401k plan, you know, whatever it takes. You need to just make one little tiny step in the right direction to make changes, you know, in your life, so it can start making improvements without being paralyzed by the fear of making a wrong decision. I think that's a lot of times where people fall down and self-sabotage themselves, is that you're not going to know everything, you know, at once. You know, you're going to
right.
learn as you go along. But what prevents people from taking action is the not knowing, so or fear of making a wrong decision about it. So mm-hmm. rather than be embarrassed or regret making a bad financial decision, we don't do anything at all. So we procrastinate. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest things that really affects people financially is that, you know, if we had knew what we knew 20 years ago in, with saving for retirement, we would be 20 years ahead versus getting started 20
right.
years later. Only because, you know, either, you know, of course, you know, we talked about it before, having lifestyle issues where you weren't able to save, or you just, you know, figure, hey, it's going to take care of itself down the road, or I have time to, you know, save later on after, you know, I've got the kids out or got them married or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then you can get started. But that's a form of procrastination as well, because then you're putting off dreams and your financial goals for a later date. You know, that's a procrastination. We really need to make small positive steps in the right direction. You're not going to be able to tackle mm-hmm. it all at once, but it's all about taking the baby steps and taking positive steps in the right direction.
Very good. I think we could probably do a whole call on how to, you know, how to help people to overcome procrastination, but I'm going to put that off for another time and say that the next one on your
mm-hmm.
list I thought was interesting. You said enjoy risky habits too much. And so I was thinking about, you know, what is the meaning of that one? And I was thinking, well, risky habits might mean, like, would it mean things like going to the casino as entertainment? Or did you have it as a different point of view when you were thinking of?
No, that was one of them that I have down here, is that enjoying risky habits too much is, any risky habit is going to eventually screw up some finances at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And like you
right.
said, you had mentioned, is having, you know, addiction to, of course, gambling, and, you know, we want the fast cash right away, so we start, you know, going to the races or horse races or going to the casino or, you know, buying lottery tickets. I see a lot of people buying, you know, lottery tickets, 50, you know, bucks, 100 bucks a month. That's money that you
mm-hmm.
can put away for something else instead of how am I going to get rich thing.
Right.
So those type of risky habits as well, or, you know, things like, you know, you need, let's say, for instance, you're a motorcyclist and, you know, that, you know, things like that. You,
mm-hmm.
you need
okay.
the latest motorcycle, or you need,
right.
you know, these things. Risky habits tend to
mm-hmm.
end up having more to do with your finances, with money that is allocated for those particular habits that you end up taking advantage of. Even smoking, you know, that's a risky
mm-hmm.
habit. But if you
yeah.
look at how much a pack or a carton of cigarettes costs you, I mean, you know, that's something that, you know, if I'm not sure, you know, where you are, but in, you know, D.C. area, you're probably looking at, you know, $50 to $75
mm-hmm.
or something on cartons of cigarettes every time you buy them. So if
exactly.
you have, you know, let's say you didn't smoke, then you're able to save, you know, $150, $200 a month on,
mm-hmm.
you know, a habit that will eventually, you know, destroy your health, but also affects your finances on a monthly basis, because that's where money is going to. So
oh.
those are some of the things that I say, enjoy the risky habits too much,
right.
you know, smoking or gambling or things like that. Is that takes away monies from things that you need to pay down your debt, save
uh-huh.
more, budget more for.
Oh, that is so true. I'll tell a little story about usually when I'm buying gas, I, you know, these days it's not like when I was first driving and you could go to the gas station and they would pump it for you. So usually I'm pumping my gas
mm-hmm.
myself and I pay at the pump. But the other day I was paying at the pump and the sign came up that said that I had to go to the cashier because the whatever it wasn't working, you know. So I not my card, but the pay at the pump feature wasn't working. So I went and stood in line to pay it with the cashier, and the person in front of me had a $50 bill in her hand, and I was thinking, okay, I saw that vehicle that she got out of, so she probably did just put in $50 worth of gas into her car. But no, she bought a case of cigarettes, a carton of cigarettes with it, and I have never smoked, so I had no clue. And I was thinking,
yeah,
I could not possibly afford to smoke because I don't have that in my budget.
Exactly, and that's the thing that you think about. Well, I mean, if you're going to have, a habit like that, I would assume, most people are going to put it in their budget, and, it's just like anything else. I have to, pay for utilities and gas for
right.
my car. It's one of those things, unfortunately, that people factor into their budgets. But that's what I was mentioning, having risky habits too much ends up, affecting your finances. You have to make a decision, if you're really strapped one month, am I going to pay $50 to, smoke my cigarettes, or I'm going to pay $50 to go grocery shopping? Those
right.
are some of the decisions you have to make. If you have a habit that I call quote unquote risky, because, eventually, smoking affects your health, but then also, you spend a certain amount of money per month, or if you go out to, the horse races or
right.
the casino, or like I said, you budget $100 a month for scratch offs on lottery, that's money that you could be putting away for something that's more fruitful. Not to say the lottery could be fruitful, it can be, but what are the odds of you winning? And then having that money allocated on a monthly basis just for that, with the odds being so low of you winning, really kind of, like I said, puts you into that self-sabotage financially. That's something that you could be doing, or doing more of a trade-off, that's more of a positive thing versus something that you're going to use that you'll probably, end up not taking advantage of.
Mm-hmm. And I have seen people that have had really, the casino gambling habits that I've just been mm-hmm. amazed sometimes at what that does to people. I'm not going to certainly name any names here, but I was actually at a conference once where I was one of the speakers, and the person who was putting on the conference offered to take me and my husband out to dinner after the event. So we were all going in their car, but we had to stop first at a casino, and we all sat in the car, and the woman putting on the event went inside, and she came back mm-hmm. out, and she said, well, thanks for waiting. Well, I did that, but I had to make enough money so that I could pay for the event hall. And I'm thinking, but
oh my gosh.
What if you didn't pay for the – what if you didn't make that money? This is not like an ATM.
Exactly. And that's things that go on in people's brains that,
right.
financially, that doesn't really make any sense. Because, like you said, I went in, I spent the money that I probably could have used for the deposit or something on the hall. But
right.
what if I did not make it back? I've lost
yes.
what I even put into it, to
mm-hmm.
do it. So that's what I'm saying. Some of these things in our brains that are going on, making, for wise financial decisions. I always tell people, I help people make smart choices about their money, because sometimes, people are thinking in left field with some of what they're
yeah.
thinking about with their finances
sometimes. This was just mind-blowing to me, because this person is a well-known internet marketing person. I'm not going to name any names, but I'm
yeah,
just going to
okay.
say that I was flabbergasted to think that, okay, so you weren't going to be able to pay for the hall until you made money by gambling. And as far as I know, gambling is just, it's rigged to lose. So
yes.
it's not like
exactly.
an ATM machine.
Yeah, the odds are so bad, with
right.
with that. And it's, the quote is, the house always wins. And that's
right.
that's the way it is. They will let you win a little bit to look like you're doing something, but the house
right.
will always win. That's basically
mm-hmm.
how it works. and, you know, people with the gambling habits. You know, it's that that thing in your brain that basically says, you know, oh, I almost won this time. Oh, maybe next time. Oh, maybe next time. And that's what gets people addicted to those particular situations. You know, some people do the same thing, you know, in the stock market. Oh, I got this. Or when they day trade, not people who are really, you know, with an investment plan that are on a consistent basis, but people who day trade, you do a lot of that. You know, oh, I gained, you know, $10. Now let's see if I can gain 50, or I can do this.
Right.
And so it's a high that people get from those particular habits that tend to be more riskier than, you know, the normal way of working with your finances.
Right. And that leads to the next number 5 point that you had, which is build up debt. You know, that's one of our bad habits, is building up debt.
Yeah, building up debt. And, you know, it's unfortunate. Americans have a lot of debt. The last statistic I saw is on average, and this is basically credit card debt. The average American owes about $47,000 on credit cards. That does include all of their, you know, your loans and other things like that. You know, so there are student loans out there, car loans, of course, the credit card debt, mortgages, you know, personal loans. You know, so if you don't have, you know, if you have debt, you know, it doesn't matter how you really got there. You need a game plan to work on how to get rid of it. And then because you're just paying a lot of interest, you know, every month, and the money that could have gone into building your wealth instead goes back to, you know, paying that. And that goes back to point one, was comparing ourselves to others. If we can't afford these things that others may have, we end up using our credit card. And so we buy the shiny new object on our credit card, and we have that shiny new object, but it's worn off its shine. 5 years from now, you're still paying for that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have used that payment to, you know, build up, you know, put savings, budget, retirement, college, whatever financial goals you have to work on. So it's really critical that, you know, you look at how you're building up the debt. You know, of course, you're going to need a mortgage. Of course, you know, you need a car loan. But really trying to figure out how is the best way to pay it down and get rid of it without building it up again. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, like I said, with financial sabotage, is that we go and buy things on credit that we cannot afford. I always tell people, if you can't afford to pay it off the next month, you really need to make a decision on, do you need this particular object in your household? If you need it, you know, of course, you know, if your furnace went out or whatever and you need to put it on there, you need to pay it over time. But if it's, you know, jewelry or, you know, all of these other things that we have that we're kind of keeping up with the Joneses, or, you know, making ourselves feel better because we're with our inner dialogue telling ourselves we're good enough, so we go out and buy stuff. If that's the way that you're putting things on credit cards, you should probably reconsider how you're using debt. And if you do build it up, how are you going to get rid of it in an efficient manner so you're not robbing your future from stuff you're doing today? I always tell people, you're robbing from your future if you don't have a way to pay it off in a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's money that you could be putting away to build up your wealth instead of paying somebody else a bunch of interest payments for something that you bought that you may or may not need it at the time, but you were keeping up with somebody else or making yourself feel better, those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the point number 6, it goes along with the same types of things that you've been talking about. It's slightly different, though. Giving in to lifestyle inflation. So I'm thinking that part of that is simply things like the fact that going to the grocery store costs more this year than it did last year. I mean, is that something that you would include in that? Because I know that my grocery bill for the last week, I was buying some things that were probably special because of Easter coming up. But there's only 2 people in our household, and the grocery bill for this past week was over $200, and I'm thinking, that hasn't happened for a really long time. Yeah. Not since when I used to have kids at home. So why is it
exactly.
that I don't think I bought any more stuff, really, and yet the bill went up?
So. Yeah, and that's what's going on is that, you know, with economic changes, you know, things are going to be more expensive. One of the things that, you know, that I wanted to discuss in this section was really most of us make more money every year through raises. You know, they may be, you know, small ones, they may be tiny, but most of us every year will get some tiny bump. But unfortunately, the thing happens that we end up spending more and more every year than we're actually bringing in. Through, you know, lifestyle choices that we're, you know, using more money, you know, we're spending more money from our paychecks to, you know, cover our lifestyle costs. Not, you know, of course, you know, we had talked about things costing more, but what I was mentioning here is really looking at people who spend more than they're actually making. Those are some
right.
of the things that people fall into that really self-sabotage themselves. That's why I always emphasize, and, you know, on several of these phone calls, is that people really need to have a budget.
Mm-hmm.
Where is your money going on a monthly basis? You know, I ask that question to all of my clients or potential clients, prospects that come in, is that, you know, where is your money going? And a lot of times people can't tell me, you know, they'll have a general idea, but nothing really kind of handwritten down where, you know, how much am I bringing in and then actually how much is going out on a monthly basis. If you don't know that, you can end up, you know, like I said, spending more money than you're actually bringing into your household. And you're never really going to become financially independent working in that framework. It's just not going to happen. So really looking
right.
at your lifestyle costs and keeping them under control will help you build wealth much faster, but you need to figure out where things are going on a monthly basis. And then from there, make those decisions on, is this a need or is this a want? Is there something in my budget that I really don't need in, you know, in my household that perhaps I can give up for, you know, 3 months, 6 months to have more money to pay down debt or more money to put money into an IRA or whatever the case may be. But knowing those, you have to kind of know your budget numbers on a monthly
right.
basis. And then, you know,
right.
there may be some things in there you want to, you know, treat yourself occasionally,
sure.
not on an ongoing basis, that you build into it, into your budget. But giving into lifestyle inflation, that, you know, that's the key word, lifestyle inflation, because
exactly.
certain people have built into their particular, their costs built into your lifestyle that you need
mm-hmm.
to consider, and
you.
Making those hard decisions on a monthly basis on how much can I put away for to build my wealth rather than going out for lifestyle choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking of some experiences that I had early in my working career. I'm thinking of at my first job that I had after I graduated from college. I started out not with a really terribly low amount of money that they
mm-hmm.
but they paid me, but after a year that I've been there, I got a nice raise, and so then I started, instead of taking my lunch to work, you know, brown bagging it, I started saying I could go out to lunch, you know, and so then
mm-hmm.
I started, after I got this raise, I went out to lunch I think every day for a week, because there were people that I knew that were that I could go out to lunch
yep.
with, so I went out to lunch with different
mm-hmm.
people every day. But when it got to be me looking at what was left of my money after the new raise and,
yeah.
and taking that lunch money out, I had less money than I used to have, and I suddenly said, you know, those brown bag lunches, they might not be as exciting to sit in the office break room and eat my sandwich, but it saved a lot more money to do that than, you know, it was so frustrating to
mm-hmm.
me in my early 20s to think that I'd gotten what I thought was this nice raise and so
yes.
I can afford to eat out for lunch, and suddenly I'm making less, I'm netting less than I was before.
Uh-huh. Exactly, and that's why I always emphasize to my clients is that when you get a raise, tell me so we can capture it. Because mm-hmm. what will happen is you will grow into that lifestyle of the raise now. Now you
right.
see there's an extra $100, $200 a month, you will start spending that much. That's why it's always mm-hmm. best to capture what that raise is before you get adjusted to it. And then now you've grown into a lifestyle accustomed to that. And so that's what happened to you, is that mm-hmm. when you got the raise, then you start doing something different. It's like, you know, I can
right.
do this. I can go out with friends. I can go out. And you've built, you grew into a lifestyle of eating out
yes.
for lunch. And
mm-hmm.
then that captured, you know, that basically negated the raise you got because you put in an extra, you know, financial factor that wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I always explain to clients is capture the raise. First of all, let me know, because then somebody else knows what's going on before you get used to it. So perhaps
mm-hmm.
we could, you know, finagle the numbers. You can use some of the raise to, you know, of course, with your lifestyle, but let's use some of that raise to build up your cash reserves or put more towards your 401k or whatever. So at least
right.
you have choices at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see the raise, you grow into that lifestyle, then it's really no going back. That's why I always explain to people who are planning for retirement, and the averages or the numbers are always 80% of your lifestyle. And I always tell people, let's plan for 100%, because it's always easier to upgrade your lifestyle versus downgrade. Once you get used
mm-hmm.
to a lifestyle, it's hard to go back. So
right.
if you plan accordingly to, you know, exactly what you're doing now, it's always easy to scale up versus scale down. So
exactly
that's
true.
What I meant by lifestyle inflation.
And I think that's a very crucial saboteur, speaking from my own
mm-hmm.
personal experience there. So,
yeah.
That was such a shock for me. I was married at the time to my first husband, but we both kept our own money. We set up our household budget so that we each put in a check for the mortgage, and so, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of like, just I only had to face myself with the fact that I had discovered this problem, but you know, it was quite a lesson for me when I suddenly figured out that I have less money than I used to have, and I'm supposed to have more. That
more money,
that was,
yeah.
Right.
It is definitely a shock when you realize, you know, because that's what I get a lot of times. People go, well, I'm making more money, but it seems like I'm not getting ahead, because
right.
this is what happened to you. You built into, you fell victim to the lifestyle inflation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you would go back to take a look at what happened with the raise, and then look at what ended up happening. You bought more, or you ended up, you know, putting something in, extra lessons for kids or something in there.
Mm-hmm.
What, if you could see with your budget, that's why it's really important to have one. Really look at where what happened when I got the raise. Did I start growing into a lifestyle and putting more into my budget that wasn't there before because of the raise? So, you know, knowing those numbers is always crucial, because then that way, you know, you'll know, so you can say, so you don't have to say, I'm making more all this money, I'm making more money, but where is it going?
Mm-hmm.
So that'll keep you in line if you take a look at where what your budget and what you're spending your money on.
That's very, very good point. So let's move on to number 7 on your list, which is waste time.
Yeah, and waste time is just what I mean, waste time. A lot of times we spend, you know, too much time watching TV, and, you know, it's the thing now, binge-watching stuff, you know. People are watching
mm-hmm.
this whole series in a weekend. You know, that's time that you can be, you know, doing your planning, you know, for, you know, either retirement or your finances or balancing your checkbook or doing something that would benefit you from a financial standpoint, versus kind of goofing off. Now, I'm, you know, one of those people that really, you know, not negating the relaxation time on the weekend, of course. But if there's, you know, blocks of time that you're spending more time doing, you know, the watching the TV versus actually planning, you know, the last statistic I saw is that people spend more time planning their vacation than they actually do their retirement. So
mm-hmm.
if so now it's April, people are planning for their, you know, their vacations in June, July, but maybe not have planned on, if I'm a retired at 65, what do I need to do to get there? You know, have I calculated my number on how much I'm going to need to retire? All of these things. We spend more time on doing other things versus the things that are important that will be able to secure your finances for the future. So that's what I mean, wasting time. You know, everybody has, you know, a certain amount of time. We all have 24 hours in a day, but how we use them really counts on, am I productive? Can I spend some of this time, you know, working on financial future, or just, you know, really just double checking my budget for the week, or, you know, looking at balancing my checkbook to see how I did, you know, updating, you know, accounts or whatever, those sort of things, is that, you know, make the time productive instead of kind of wasting time. Because a lot of times we have it and we ended up, you know, doing something else with it. But, you know, carving out a time, I always tell my clients, you know, on a weekly basis, depending on, you know, if we're on a budget crisis, I always put people, if they don't know where their money's going, I give them this money exercise and budget exercise to, on a weekly basis, at the end of each week, see where your money went and do a, you know, kind of an itemized expense report on where did my money go. We make, you know, nice little pie charts and things like that. So at least on a weekly basis, you can balance your checkbook, see where your expenses are, how much you can put away for cash reserves or some other financial goal. So on a weekly basis, you'll kind of see where things are going. So they've built that into the time factor. Hopefully they've built it into their time factor on, this is what I need to do. I need to spend a couple hours each week on looking at where my budget is, updating the expense report on the website that I give them, and then basically looking at their finances on a weekly basis. So putting that into your overall strategy versus kind of wasting some time is really a good thing, so you won't sabotage yourself. Because if you let too much time go by, then you know, okay, I got way too many, you know, expenses to look at. If you kind of cut it up into every week instead of waiting on a monthly basis. Some people work good monthly, but if some people really would get overwhelmed if it gets too far ahead, some of the time that you could have used when you were kind of binge watching or doing some other things, you could spend a couple hours to get into better financial shape for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's excellent, and it's certainly easy to waste time. I think any person who is human has wasted time at some point in their lives or another. But I want to get back to the final point of these bad habits that you've identified, which you kind of have alluded to in some of our earlier discussion. You've talked about anyone who's a client of yours, you have them work on financial planning and their financial goals. So your eighth point here of bad habits is not having any financial goals. And I'm curious, how often do you think that happens with people? Is that a pretty typical when you start meeting with people?
It's more typical with younger people, because, you know, it's really difficult sometimes to kind of figure out where they want to focus in on, because they have so many things. It's not as prevalent in older clients. But the no financial goals, you know, I always said, you know, at least, you know, have, you know, something that you're working on. You know, every self-help book and every goal setting exercise you've ever taken advantage of always tells you, you know, if you don't have something to aim for, you're not going to make it anyway, because you don't have any target to work towards. So really having some long-term financial goals. So I always work on an exercise with short-term financial goals, kind of midterm financial goals, and then long term. So, you know, if your short term would be 1 to 3 years, so if you want to do anything in that particular time frame, perhaps save for a house or fund a wedding for a child or things like that, would fall into kind of your short term goals. And then longer term goals, depending on when you're going to retire, for young people would be longer. So, you know, starting your 401k, things like that for your future retirement. And then midterm goals, if you want to pay down debt at a certain rate, or if you're saving money for your second house or things like that. So having some type of financial goals in place will in fact, well, hopefully it will stop you from self-sabotaging yourself financially, because at least you know you're working towards something. So if you get a raise, or if you get a windfall, or if you get something, you can earmark it. I always call it earmarking it for my retirement, or my house down payment, or my college, education for my child, or something. So you have these buckets that you're working in, framework that you're working in. If you have those particular goals outlined for you, you hopefully won't self-sabotage yourself, because you can put money away in the particular categories they need to in order to move yourself forward financially. So that's what I meant by having no financial goals. Having no financial goals at all really leaves you susceptible to a lot of folly with your money. Mm-hmm. And, kind of loose with your money sometimes, because you don't have anything that you're working towards. You probably have things that you need to be working towards, but not having them outlined to, I need to put X amount of dollars away this month for cash reserve, or I need to put this much money away for my child's education over the next, 5 years or something. So mm-hmm. having financial goals will hopefully save you from self-sabotaging yourself financially by having an opportunity to put money away.
Okay. All right. So I'm stopping here for a second, because I know you and I wanted to talk about eight additional things, eight money sabotaging emotions.
Yeah.
And I'm
exactly.
also looking at our time frame here, so I'm curious whether mm-hmm. you think that we should try to cover the emotions, or whether we should talk about how we can take steps to overcome our bad habits. Which way do you think would be the best way to...
Probably steps in order to overcome those. Yeah, the other ones are, there's a lot of different things that go along with the financial self-sabotage, and a lot of them have to do with the emotions that you're feeling as well. So perhaps we can do another phone call to talk about just the eight emotions, because there's a lot going on there as well. But we can talk about the ways to basically reframe or deal with the eight that we already talked about. Now, the first one I already talked about is, comparing yourself to others. And, that's something that you have to really be cognizant of. That's human nature. We're always going mm-hmm. to do, that person got a bigger boat, that person has this and whatever. So if you're able to at least identify some of these particular ways that you may be self-sabotaging yourself. Every self-help person always says it starts with awareness. So if you mm-hmm. become aware that you're doing these things, perhaps you will not fall into self-sabotaging yourself financially. So comparing yourself to others, just really realize, the emotion that you're feeling when you see, somebody with something. Do you immediately have to have it because they have it? If that's the case, then that's something that you may fall victim to. So try to stop yourself by feeling what emotion that you're feeling based on what somebody else has. And then that you end up comparing yourself to others. The other, being the inner dialogue, really trying to figure out ways to talk better to yourself. I call it the loving voice instead of kind of the negative self-talk. So, everybody talks about affirmations. It's really an affirmation that, I am, I am this, I can, afford this. I can do, I can be better with my money. One of the things that I hear a lot of times, especially from women, especially from boomer women, is that, I'm not good with money. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. And there's a lot of don'ts going on. So that mm-hmm. inner dialogue with women, with money, we really need to replace that with a more loving voice, that I may not be, I may not feel that I'm good with money now, but I am learning. At least trying to put yourself in a positive framework when it comes to that, versus all of the don'ts and I can't and I do that. That really weighs heavy on you financially, and then that ends up, you end up self-sabotaging yourself only because you tell yourself, see, I wasn't good with money, because your inner dialogue said, I'm not good with money. So what are you going to go out and do? You're going to basically go out and show people, I'm not good with money, and make poor choices with your money, or not save enough, or, you know, buy extra things on credit, all of these particular things to basically act out what your inner voice is telling you, that I'm not good with money. So trying to replace that dialogue with a more loving voice, that I may not be this at this particular point in time, but I am learning, or I have made a positive step towards, you know, putting money away for my retirement this month. Really celebrate those baby steps. That kind of brings on to also the procrastination point. Celebrate those small baby steps that you make towards your finances on a, you know, daily basis if you can. I always tell people to keep a I'm really big with journaling, so I always tell people to journal is really, you know, what happened in the day. So really celebrate those particular, give yourself a gold star for that day. I balance my checkbook, or I put, you know, $50 in my, you know, in my checking account or my savings account. Really, you know, those baby steps that you're making towards your financial goals, if you can capture those in a journaling process, then that way that will also affect how you talk to yourself from your dialogue, because you see, you will be able to see the positive steps that you're making and talk to yourself more more positive about your finances. Risky habits, of course, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, that's risky habits financially. It's more of a sometimes more of an addiction. So, you know, you really need to figure out, do you want to eliminate these particular things from your existence and from your life? You know, if you want to stop smoking, or if you, you know, stop gambling, a lot of organizations out there that will be able to help you with those particular risky habits if you want to eliminate those out of your life. So finding resources that will be able to do so with that. The debt thing, you really need to just be able to have an ultimate game plan on figuring out how to pay down your debt. You know, like I said, the average person has about $47,000 in credit card debt. That's a lot to put on credit cards. So having a way that if you're going to charge money on a credit card, having a game plan on how you're going to pay it off. Most credit card companies now are, based on the Credit Act a few years ago, are required to put down how much it's going to take to pay off. If you pay the minimum, if you pay maybe $20 more, or how long it's going to take you based how much you're paying. So look at those on your credit card statement. That's an eye-opener in itself. So if you buy something and you're only paying the minimum, or you're doing something like that, it'll tell you. So like, how you bought this day, you pay the $25 for that. It's going to take you 7 years to pay off something that you bought. So that's 7 years of your life that you basically are robbing your future from without building wealth. So really figure out those. That's an eye-opener, like I said, in itself, is really figuring out how long it's going to take you to pay down your debt.
Especially if that debt is built on consumable things like shoes, and you know, because I can tell you that I once was a shoeaholic. I once, you know, had a different pair of shoes for every single outfit, and the concept of you know, thinking that, you know, that each of those shoes was, you know, $50 to $100, because I tried to buy them on sale, so they, you know, maybe they were $50 to $100, but still, you know, the fact of if I'm only going to pay, as you said, $25 a month on those, 7 years later, I'm still paying for shoes that I'm not wearing anymore.
You're still paying for shoes. Exactly. And that's why I always tell people, it's like, do you still want to be paying for this particular item 5 to 7 years from now, and you've long got rid of this particular object? If that's the case, then do what you're doing. But if it's not, then come up with some type of game plan to pay off your debt in a reasonable fashion, so you're not, you know, like I said, robbing your future in order to pay for stuff that you have now. It's really, you know, it's a choice that you have to make. And then just, you know, I think one last thing about the lifestyle inflation. Capture those raises and make sure you don't become accustomed to the lifestyle, upgrade your lifestyle right when you get the raise. because then you won't even see it, you won't even notice it, and you know you fall victim to that and running into lifestyle cost. And then of course the best use of your time and not wasting time with that, and then having overall financial goals will hopefully stop you from self-sabotaging yourself financially. So we went through a lot tonight, and I know it's probably a little bit over or where we are, but I'm definitely willing to take questions if we do have anybody on the line or written in questions.
Let me see if we've got anybody here who's like to ask a question. Go ahead. Otherwise, I'm going to check and see if anybody sent in any questions. So while I'm checking that, just speak up if you're here with a question. Well, I'm not hearing anybody speaking up, Pam, but
okay.
I think
Alrighty.
We've got a couple of questions that we had. A question that was, how do we stop self-sabotage? I think you've covered that a little bit already, but
yeah, and then I think on that particular question, I know it's pretty general, but we went over basically 8 ways that people are. It's really to identify which particular area that you're falling victim to when you're self-sabotaging yourself. So if it's keeping up with the Joneses, if you tend to buy things because others have them or you're trying to impress others. So I would probably, with that particular question, respond is really identify where you may be self-sabotaging yourself financially. And then based on the discussion we had this evening, really figure out a way to not fall victim to the self-sabotage is, am I wasting time? Am I procrastinating? Do I have financial goals? All of those particular things. Find out which area may be that you may be affected by financial sabotage, and then see how you will be able to come up with a solution from there.
I think that's a very good answer. And then just to remind people, we have a secondary part of this call that we will schedule and let you know about, which will be about 8 money sabotaging emotions that do tie in with those bad habits, as Pam has already alluded to. But just to give you a hint, some of those emotions that we're going to be talking about would be anxiety, jealousy, regret, guilt, even guilt and feeling overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I think too many of us have women especially deal with overwhelm all the time. So that is not the whole 8, but that's just to give people a little bit of a heads up of what will be coming up in that next call that has to do with this. And does anybody else have any questions before we wrap up the call tonight? I do want to remind people that if you have any questions in the future that you don't think of right now, you can certainly contact Pam after the call. You can email her at Pamela. Is it Pamela or is it Pam?
Pamela.
Right, that's what I thought it was. Pamela at JacksonSams.com. Or I noticed, Pam, that you've updated your website. It's a beautiful website. I'm not quite sure how long it's been new. But do people go check JacksonSams.com. There's a wealth of free, wonderful information that Pam has included there on a wide variety of financial topics and not just the topics that we had there tonight, but you have some tons of wonderful information on that site, Pam. So I say kudos to you about that.
Thank you.
So other than that, I will just say that, Pam, as usual, it's been great talking with you this evening, and thank you for being my guest and for this great discussion of our 8 bad habits and the ways that we can start to learn how to turn these habits around and stop sabotaging ourselves when it comes to our reaching our financial goals. So thank you.
Well, thanks very for having
much.
Me.
Sure. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we wrap up the call?
Nope, that's it. We talked about a ton of things as usual on these phone calls, and it's this is one of the areas that is very important, because without identifying where you may be self-sabotaging yourself financially, there will be no financial independence. So if there's a way to really capture what we've talked about today, identify some of the areas that you may be falling victim to, and then try to reframe or correct that in order to move forward financially for yourself is probably the most important thing you can do for yourself. So that's the only thing I have to say, Anne.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Pam, and thank you to our listeners. I'm sorry that we didn't have time for people to ask any questions, but do remember that Pam is available to answer questions if you come up with them later. And you can also post any questions on the probably the easiest place to post them, if you wanted to post them for anybody from NABBW to see, would be on our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/NABBW. And I think we're getting a lot of traffic there with people interested on baby boomer topics, and certainly baby boomers and financial situations are a hot thing to be discussed there. So I will end with that, and once again thank everyone for joining us tonight, and say good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.